Involvement with the criminal justice system is life-changing. It matters.
Having a justice system that works is a really important part of a democratic society.
I'm Penelope Gibbs, Director of Transform Justice.
I'm Rob Allen. I've worked in and around criminal justice all my career.
This is the Transform Justice podcast, throwing light on the criminal justice system.
Hearing from people who know.
It's about whether the system's fair.
And what can be done to make it better.
In this podcast, we'll be discussing remand. That's the imprisonment of people while they wait to be tried for a crime. And why so many more people are in this limbo during COVID than they were before. To discuss why we deprive innocent people of their liberty, Rob and I are joined by May Robson, who's done research into foreign national women and remand, and Griff Ferris, who works for the charity Fair Trials. Rob, you've looked at remand, you've visited prisons. If you went to a prison in England and Wales today, would you notice any difference between the people who are on remand, waiting trial, and those who've actually been sentenced to imprisonment?
Honestly, probably not in most cases. There are supposed to be some different arrangements, but in practice, remand prisoners aren't held separately from sentenced ones.
They might be wearing different clothes, maybe?
They're allowed to keep their own clothes. They're allowed to vote. They have that right. They might have access to more visits. But in practice, at a day-to-day level, it's pretty much the same.
So during COVID, it was still 23 hours in a cell?
Well, for remand prisoners, their conditions might be worse than sentenced ones. They may not have access to education, work, treatment, that kind of thing, because after all, they're innocent. They have not been found guilty, and they're really just being held pending the trial process.
May, the women you researched were all being imprisoned before their trial. So why on earth were they being imprisoned? Can you give some kind of examples?
Yeah, so the research I did was looking at foreign national women who were being held on remand.
What does foreign national mean?
That you don't have British citizenship in the UK. There's a higher proportion of foreign national women who are held in for less serious offences than there are British national women. And actually, these women might, as a result, be held in for other reasons, such as their immigration status. There's a belief that foreign nationals in general will abscond from attending court.
What does that mean?
Absconding means not turning up to court. So for a foreign national, that translates often as they'll perceive you as a flight risk. So the fear is that
they literally think you're going to go to the airport and get on a flight.
Yes, exactly. Exactly that. And it's measured in terms of community ties. And these things they're not defined in law. So the court has wide discretion as to what defines community ties. And the lawyers that I spoke to told me that might range from, I don't know, not having a bank account, not having family in the UK, things that might tie you to the UK.
Mm. So flight risk, that's one of the reasons that courts might remand somebody to custody. What are the other ones? Do we know? Griff, what's the research show on that?
So as well as whether or not you're a flight risk, you can be denied bail and held on remand if they believe that you might commit further offences. You can be held because you don't have a registered address. And this kind of feeds into the idea that, you know, you don't have a fixed place and therefore you could go anywhere and are less likely to turn up. You can be held if you're going to kind of interfere with the trial. So if it's thought that you might interfere with your future trial or try and speak to witnesses. So there's quite a number of reasons. The way that the system is meant to work is that if you appear in front of a court charged with a crime, there is a presumption in favor of bail. And what that means is that you should walk free whilst awaiting trial for whatever crime it's been alleged that you have committed, rather than being held on remand in prison waiting for that trial. Something that we are struggling to understand or trying to understand more is why defendants' representatives often don't challenge what the prosecution say about why these people should be held on remand. So the prosecution basically can stand up and say, oh, they're a foreign national, therefore they're a flight risk, or we've got lots of evidence that they're involved in drug dealing, and therefore we think that they might continue if released. And the defendant's representatives just don't challenge that. And so that's taken as a fact, that's accepted by the judge, and that's given as the reason why people are then held. What some of the people that wrote to us, one person was, it was said that he was a flight risk. This is a 60-year-old man who says he's got no criminal record. And the reasons for not granting bail were that he would abscond so that he'd not be there when it came to the trial or commit further offences. But on paper, you know, no criminal record. He says he doesn't have a passport. He also says that he was living with his parents at the time and that he was basically their carer. So, you know, on the face of it, the facts would point that this isn't someone who is likely to abscond or to leave the country. One of the people that wrote to us, Farhan, it's not his real name, he was told that when it came to his hearing that he was a flight risk because he was Lithuanian. Even though he'd lived in the UK for 12 years, he had his family here, his mother, sister, his ex-partner, and his son. His young son was only 3 years old at the time. And this case was being heard when the UK was in full lockdown. So, you know, there were very few flights. He had very clear ties to the UK, and he was still denied bail.
So, May, I mean, literally, it was more difficult to get on a flight during COVID. Did that not make it more likely for foreign national women to be able to be free as they were awaiting their trial? Did you notice a difference in behaviour in the courts?
I didn't notice a difference in behaviour. I think it's not just that people are perceived as a flight risk, they're perceived as more risky in general. Bail is seen as an extension of immigration control, and there's a lot of confusion and misunderstanding about the difference between criminal law and immigration law, and that often people are kind of being held because people aren't sure what to do with them.
Griff, underneath this kind of issue of are people going to turn up at court, what do people do? What information do they give to reassure the court that they will get to court, and what difficulties do they have with that?
So one of the most basic things that people do is they say where they live, they give their address. But unfortunately, if someone doesn't have a fixed address, if they are moving about or perhaps they're experiencing homelessness, the court can get very kind of nervous around this and see that as a kind of very blunt reason that someone might not turn up, that they might not turn up to their trial. There was a man who was denied bail because he didn't have a fixed address. And then he got into all sorts of kind of long conversations with the court, trying to kind of say that, oh, he could stay with his partner, he could stay with a parent, and was desperately trying to find a place so that he had a fixed address so that he could be released on bail and the court would, court would release him to that address and they wouldn't do so.
So literally, you're more likely to be imprisoned if you're homeless?
Yes, unfortunately, yes, that's the case. And there's very good evidence that if you are homeless or you don't have a fixed address, effectively, you are much more likely to be remanded.
Griff, you've looked at the impact that COVID has had on this whole part of the criminal justice process. What did you find? Are more people remanded in custody? I think the proportion of people in prison who are on remand has gone up. Is that your experience?
Yes, that's certainly our experience. And we have, you know, a network of lawyers who try and keep us updated with what's going on in the criminal courts. And we were receiving anecdotal reports that people were being remanded far too easily and for excessively long periods of time. And people were being remanded, you know, without good reason. One example was a 14-year-old defendant whose time on remand was extended despite his very young age. There's something called a custody time limit, which is the legal time limit that you're allowed to spend on remand. And at the moment in England and Wales, that's 6 months. Once you've been on remand, been held in prison for 6 months, in theory, you're meant to be released. But in practice, often what happens is that the prosecution apply to extend that. What we were hearing about during the pandemic was that these 6 month custody time limits were being repeatedly extended.
So how long did people end up spending?
So, I mean, many more than 6 months and sometimes more than a year and sometimes even more than 2 years. And it took a long time to try and get, you know, some hard facts from the government. We sent repeated Freedom of Information requests. We had questions asked in Parliament. And it wasn't until early 2021, so, you know, more than a year after the pandemic started, that we started to actually get this information. The government was very difficult about providing it, but the initial figures were very stark, that thousands of people were being held longer than this 6 month time limit.
And was this because the courts weren't sitting when in the lockdown, and therefore their cases couldn't be heard? Was that the reason?
It was certainly partially due to that. But the fact is that the court delays were already a serious problem before the pandemic started. As an indication of how many cases were delayed before the pandemic, it was around 40,000. Currently, after kind of the effects of the pandemic, it's around 60,000. So it had a noticeable impact and had a very serious impact. But the fact is that these were long-standing issues because of political decisions.
So judges just went fine. You know, the prosecution goes, we need more time, we can't hold the trial. And judges routinely or always, were there any exceptions to that?
You're meant to only extend this six-month limit if there are exceptional circumstances. But it became a very lazy, almost kind of legal fiction whereby they were always extending these custody time limits and giving the pandemic as an excuse. But there was one judge who bravely put his head over the parapet and said, this is not good enough. I'm not going to extend the custody time limit. In one particular case, it was a 19-year-old who had learning difficulties, who was on remand for alleged drugs offences. There was also a question over whether he'd been trafficked. But this judge, a guy called Keith Rayner, he stuck his head up above the parapet and said, I'm not going to do this. I refuse to extend this young person's custody time limit, and specifically went after the government, criticizing them and saying they'd had plenty of time to implement measures. The pandemic could no longer be given as a reason for depriving people of their liberty and holding them on remand.
Griff, I think in your report you spoke about some low-risk prisoners being temporarily released, but not enough, and the remand prisoners weren't part of the scheme. I just wondered if there are any other examples of other countries that dealt with the situation of the pandemic better than the UK in terms of how they dealt with remand prisoners.
So, yeah, there were certainly other countries who approached this very differently. A number of countries in Europe, Italy and Greece, for example, and even America, which is often, you know, seen rightly as having a very, you know, punishing carceral approach to all forms of, you know, criminality or social issues. Many other countries decided to release people. They erred on the side of not remanding people. So around Europe, certainly a lot of countries, remand populations, people held in prison awaiting trial, they were significantly reduced.
In the COVID period, did the courts change the rules for remand? I mean, we were all in lockdown, weren't we? You would have thought they would be more generous in terms of granting bail, allowing people to go home rather than putting them into prison. But that didn't seem to happen.
I think with foreign nationals and specifically foreign national women, I think that the real issue is the expansion of border control into the criminal justice system in general, and that the whole prison system and court system and system of policing has all been reformed around these goals, and that's not going to go away just because there's a pandemic. I think that's the real issue and something that needs to be addressed, and that this will keep happening specifically to this group of people. And that, as we know, that kind of border control is also feeding inherent kind of racism. I spoke to a couple of prosecutors and I asked them what jumps to their mind when they first hear the word foreign national woman. One of them said, my mind immediately jumps to organised criminals. And the other one said, you know, they tend to be in for theft offences. They often operate with more than one of them. But, you know, he said, I don't want to make generalised sweeping statements. These like racialised and gender stereotypes that associate migrants and also Black and Asian and people of ethnic minority backgrounds with criminality are really mobilised by legal practitioners, which then kind of inherently fixing these people as dangerous groups when actually, like you said, their background might not have any previous convictions.
I mean, I think at every level we're talking about a sort of lack of information. And one of the problems is that once somebody has been kept in the police station after they've been charged, so they can't leave the police station, they have to go straight to court. Once that happens, all the court has is the same information the police had in the first place. And same with the prosecution. So I think often the judges think that the prosecution knows more than just literally a piece of paper that they got handed that morning, when in fact they don't. So they talk the talk and they're confident in their case. But in general, I think prosecutors ask for remand if the police ask them to ask for remand. And the information that everybody has is very, very thin, as I say.
Yeah, and that's also a particular issue when the defendant, English isn't their first language, and there's a lack of interpreters at police stations and a lot of errors or facts of the case missing. And often these people go through the whole bail hearing and system without understanding what's going on because it hasn't been explained to them. And obviously, as we know, courts use a lot of legal jargon and are kind of very impenetrable for people, even if English is your first language, I think.
But you should get a lawyer, shouldn't you, at this stage of the game? I mean, if your liberty is at risk, you might be remanded to prison. Do you have a right to a lawyer to represent you?
People should automatically have the right to legal representation, the right to a lawyer. But unfortunately, for kind of various reasons, people don't always get that. Sometimes it's a language barrier. Sometimes it's a failure of the system. But around 10% of people haven't actually had legal representation before they're then remanded.
I mean, Griff, you suggested that maybe defence lawyers aren't doing as much as they could to challenge the prosecution. Do you think they could be doing more here? And should the courts be spending more time on this? It's a big decision to put somebody behind bars. And I think some of your research has found that this is made in a matter of minutes often. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, first of all, I think that, yes, if you're representing someone, then absolutely you should kind of fight tooth and nail to stop them being remanded or any other kind of punitive conditions being imposed, even if they are released on bail. But that does appear to be the case, that generally, if the prosecution makes the case for remand, it's often not challenged. And I have to be honest, we don't know the kind of the exact reason why that isn't happening enough or as much as it should do. But ultimately, the fact is that these very serious decisions, whether to remand someone, and as we've heard, is, you know, that decision to remand can then often lead to someone being held in prison conditions for 6 months, for more than 6 months, often for, you know, what are kind of not that serious offences, theft offences or drugs offences, for a decision that's made in under 10 minutes, sometimes under 5 minutes. The research that Fair Trials and some academics working with Fair Trials found in 2016 that hearings were often taking a short amount of time, and that pre-trial detention decision itself was sometimes taking less than 5 minutes. And that can lead to someone being held in prison for up to 6 months, and as we've heard, more than 6 months.
May, that's incredibly little time to discuss whether somebody's going to be in prison for 6 months or more. That kind of implies a kind of tick box approach. Was that what you saw?
Yeah, I think the tick box approach is definitely true. And lawyers I spoke to describe the courts as a meat grinder, a factory farm, and a recipe for post-traumatic stress disorder. And one lawyer told me that kind of justified it. She was like, you know, I mean, hardly anyone understands these court proceedings. And I guess the court environment in itself is quite strict. So people don't ask questions and don't advocate for their rights, particularly if you are a more vulnerable or disadvantaged group. And time issue is an even bigger issue if you need to use an interpreter. You know, you're only given 10 minutes to meet with your lawyer before your bail hearing, but you have three people in this conversation, an interpreter, the lawyer, and the defendant.
So in 10 minutes, they're supposed to get through who they are, what the case is about, what kind of background they have that may persuade a court not to imprison them on remand, and maybe whether they take on advice as to whether they should plead guilty or not guilty, all in 10 minutes?
Yeah, if that.
Griff, was that made worse by anything? I mean, I know that there's been a trend, certainly during COVID, to put defendants on video so that in their court hearing, they're not actually in the court, they're on a video and the rest of the people are in the court?
Yeah, absolutely. So unsurprisingly, maybe because of the pandemic and restrictions imposed and trying to limit contact, it was a huge shift in the justice system to have suddenly the majority of criminal hearings being dealt with remotely in some sense, either via an audio link on the phone or via video link. And this is something which has a huge impact on people, as we've all experienced over the last few years. Having to have meaningful conversations via kind of a video screen can be difficult. It can be difficult when it's just kind of catching up with someone, let alone when it's a criminal proceeding, it's a criminal hearing. And if it doesn't go well, you could be held on remand. As has been mentioned, there's communication difficulties, even when everyone speaks the same language perfectly, let alone when people have other languages as their first language. But it also has a serious impact on people with learning difficulties who find it much more difficult to understand what's going on, to be able to communicate effectively, and ultimately to be able to participate effectively. And something that we found in a lot of the people that wrote to us about their experience of being held on remand during the pandemic, a lot of people did mention the legal advice that they did or didn't receive. So one person said to us, legal advice was restricted. This is someone who's being held on remand. So the prison was very bad at communicating to legal firms or prisoners that legal representatives could video call from any device. Most still believed it had to be done from a court. That evidence is that, you know, the prison didn't know what was going on. And this is something that was kind of very common. You know, people didn't understand the technology. They didn't know how to use it. It often didn't work. Someone who was held for up to a year said that since lockdown, I have only received 2 or 3 video conferences and they have been totally inadequate. I feel it's no substitution as there's a delay, as in a delay in the feed, and we all end up talking over each other. And that's just a kind of a small taste of, you know, what we've all experienced on video, you know, having video conversations over the last few years. But when it's such high pressure situations, you're desperately trying to communicate to your legal team, you're desperately trying to communicate what's happened to you, you're desperately trying to communicate to the court what's happened, and you're being restricted by this method.
Sounds less than ideal. We've heard that the decision making isn't a good process, but you've got these people remanded in custody, often for many months. I was surprised to see that most of them don't get a prison sentence after this period on remand. So having decided that these people need to be behind bars during the remand period, the court seems to then say, when it comes to the sentencing decision, you don't need to be in prison. Isn't that a bit of a paradox? How do you explain that?
I think it can only be explained by the fact that, you know, these are people who shouldn't have been remanded in the first place. If you've got such a high proportion of people who have been held on remand awaiting trial, and then when it actually comes to the trial, they aren't given a custodial sentence. So they're either not convicted, or the sentence they're given is, you know, a community order. So they're released, and there are certain things that they have to do, but it's not prison. You know, prison is a very serious outcome, and it should only be used in the most serious cases. And what we're obviously seeing is that people are being remanded for things that ultimately are not serious enough.
May, what about your cases that you looked at, the foreign nationals? Did they all end up getting prison sentences, or were most of those dealt with in different ways?
Yeah, so there's lots of evidence that custodial remand is overused for women, particularly Black, Asian and minority women and foreign nationals. 3/4 of Black, Asian and minority ethnic women didn't go on to receive a custodial sentence. And I think it's really difficult to get the government to answer to this.
During the pandemic, when the government extended the custody time limit, they effectively knew that everyone, but particularly Black defendants, were more likely to be held on remand, and the government still went ahead and did it anyway. So they're just not doing enough to address the overall issues with remand, but particularly the way that remand affects racialized groups, particularly Black defendants. You know, more than half of Black defendants are remanded in Crown Court proceedings, and this is despite the fact that Black defendants within the criminal justice system are much less likely than white defendants to go on and then receive a custodial sentence. And, you know, that's notwithstanding the fact that often these decisions will be prejudiced against those Black defendants. They're still less likely than white defendants statistically to go on to receive a custodial sentence. And yet they are remanded at much higher rates. You know, that's the kind of thing that entirely represents that the structural racism within the justice system. And it's something which has been prevalent year on year on year.
That's troubling findings indeed. But we've heard about cases that on the face of it really don't need to be dealt with by remand in custody. But presumably, do you each think that there are some cases where people do need to be remanded to prison?
Obviously, in some cases, people do need to be remanded, but risk should be evaluated as to whether that person is a risk to somebody else or a risk to themselves. And I think maybe those are the two cases in which I think remand should be used.
So I think the concept of whether we should remand people awaiting trial is also linked to the, you know, whether and how much we should be putting people in prison. And it speaks to the idea of how we want to address kind of problems within society. Yes, you know, in very serious cases where there's been, you know, very serious violence or allegations of very serious violence, it can be said that something needs to be done, and that might be remand, you know, holding someone for the kind of the safety of wider society or society at large or particular individuals. But I think in the majority of cases where, you know, or many cases where people are remanded, it's for these non-violent offences. It's for theft offences. It's for drugs offences. You know, people shouldn't be being remanded for these offences or even imprisoned for these offences.
May, looking at the system as a whole, you've painted a picture of quite a dysfunctional system. What would you do to improve it?
I think there needs to be more scrutiny on police decision-making on remand. I think that's a really overlooked part of the remand system, as we've seen. What is decided in the police station then influences people later on. I think custodial remand needs to be kind of a measure of last resort, and that actually needs to happen in practice and not just on paper. And as we've spoken about, I think there needs to be an end to kind of these really like vague refusals that don't actually give explanations for their decisions. So because they are foreign national, because they have no fixed abode, that's quite a big thing that needs to change.
So Griff, what about you? If you were Minister of Justice and could introduce one reform to the remand system we've been talking about, what would you do?
I think there are serious structural issues around discrimination, as we've heard, around foreign nationals, people experiencing homelessness, people from minoritized ethnic backgrounds. And I think what needs to be done is to have a long, hard look at why we need to be remanding people at the rates we are, why we need to be imprisoning people at the rates we are. You know, there's lots of kind of smaller reforms that are very legitimate and would ultimately be positive and would help. But I think what's needed is a proper structural look at why we remand people at the rates we do, why we remand people for the crimes that we do, and why we look to what is ultimately a form of imprisonment to address this issue.
Thanks, Rob, Griff and May.
Thank you so much for having me.
No worries.
And information on their research will be in the programme notes, together with contact details for us. If you have an idea for one of these podcasts or just want to feedback, do get in touch by Twitter or email. Thanks and goodbye.